Nobody wants to listen to some stodgy banker tell you that your money is safe.
Stodgy banker. Immediately, I saw a suit. Yes. Stiff. You know what I mean? Tie, buttoned up all the way. Everything so stiff and neat. And I saw that.
So if the same banker, had spilled a little coffee on his tie, it made him more human. Because he probably laughed at a joke and spilled his coffee.
Right.
Welcome to the Vibe Clinic podcast and Allo Thoughts Media production. I'm the nurse, Cece, and today we are diving deep into the art of finding humor in life's moments, embracing creative thinking, and even the elements of writing a book. Oh, but we have an expert guest today. I can say that his ideas behind his writing style inspired me to embrace new ways of writing.
We are sitting in front of Mr. Michael Sisti. Thank you so much. Would you mind introducing yourself?
Okay. Yeah. I am Michael Sisti. A consultant, and the distributor of fun.
A distributor of fun. What makes you say that? What practices do you do to distribute fun?
Well, first I had to learn to have fun and make everything fun and see all the fun around me. And that started probably about age 7.
Wow.
I had all these chores to do like every other kid, and you always hate chores. So I always found a way to make it fun. And in doing that, you're kind of looking around and seeing where the humor is.
Mm.
And of course, growing up, the humor was mostly with my sister because my kid brother and I used to make fun of her all the time and tease her. And that's what brothers did.
Yeah.
But I got past that. But I found that if you make things fun, you perform better, you do better, you're more satisfied, and time goes by faster.
Yes, it does.
So it became kind of a passion with me that I was always looking around and I saw humor everywhere. And when I didn't see the humor, I saw a situation. You'd say, well, what if that were this way?
Uh-huh.
And then that situation would be fun. And you'd laugh at that.
Yeah.
And so that went on through my entire career. I mean, my career has been creative driven. My first real business where I had to support my family was a printing business.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called Design Printing because I was designing the material that I printed. That evolved into sales promotion and advertising and marketing and branding. And that's been my career. And again, it's observing what's going on around you.
Mm.
And marketing messages, advertising messages are always better if there's a little humor in them.
You're right.
My business, and I was very new in the business back then.
Yeah.
My first client back then, I'm in the city, I was writing little tiny ads for a menswear store, a retail store. That's where I started with the advertising. So, but then, I had some ideas about stories I wanted to write. I wasn't retired, but when I left Rhode Island and came to Sarasota, I started doing consulting. So I wasn't working for my own business where I had a staff. It was just me going out and doing consulting. And that's when I started writing this, first the tribute to the staff and then the book.
Here on the Vibe Clinic podcast, we love to talk about things that just help us to see better, feel better, do better, whatever that is. And it's interesting to me, you see the humor and everything, just with the times being what they are. And I'm like, what advice would you give myself and the listeners right now to put that like a practical piece where we can use that to see some humor around us?
Like I say, you need to be observant, and it's a very simple thing to train. And even, and it's not just visual. I mean, sometimes you hear about things, I lived in Rhode Island for a while. I told this story at a luncheon last week and the people fell on the floor. But Rhode Island is a very strange state. It's a one-party state. Mm-hmm. And so there's not a lot of angst between the Democrats and the Republicans.
Right.
A Democrat state, so you take the Democrats for granted.
Uh-huh.
And it's also a union state, so most everybody is in a union in Rhode Island. And I always refer to it as Rhode Island is a state where it's 2 degrees of separation.
Uh-huh.
It's such a small state, everybody's related to everybody. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
that's the 2 degrees.
Yeah, like, yeah. That's the 2 degrees. But you know, there's a lot of harmony because we don't, you know, they're not fighting about what we're fighting about now,
right,
with the politics.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just totally out of hand.
Yeah.
But one of the things I learned when I was there, I was invited to write a blog post for a new website that had just started,
mm-hmm,
all about Rhode Island. So I had to learn about Rhode Island. And I'm traveling around, I'm asking people things. And it turns out that other than the lottery, there's no gambling in Rhode Island.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Now, right at the state line in Connecticut,
uh-huh,
you've got the Indian casinos.
Mm-hmm.
And in Massachusetts, off some of the other highways, you have casinos.
Uh-huh.
But Rhode Island doesn't have any casinos.
Uh-huh.
It does have a dog track.
Oh,
okay. So people go to the dog track, and of course, there's parimutuel betting for other horse racing and other things.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually gamble there, you know,
right?
Even though they say there's no gambling. So I thought that was interesting. That I'm not into dog tracks, but
yeah,
at the time, I'm probably not even open anymore because I know they've closed most of them,
mm-hmm,
including the one here. I'm learning about this dog track,
yeah,
and I find out that the state of Rhode Island gives them a subsidy every year to make sure they're solvent. They were paying them, I think it was $10 million a year.
Wow.
So I'm looking at this dog track, which is a monopoly on gambling in Rhode Island. I'm saying, why do they need $10 million? Why do they need a handout?
Right.
So, and of course, it was political. It was all about the politics of the state. So apparently the dog track people were donors to the party and, you know, that kind of thing. So it was politics.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's a one-party state, it was politics. So I'm thinking about this. And again, now my creative mind starts going and the what-ifs come into play. And I'm saying to myself, okay, so what would happen if the state stopped giving them the $10 million?
Uh-huh.
So what's going to happen to the dog track? Well, they're going to still race dogs, but what's going to happen is they're not going to be able to pay the people that take care of the dogs and take care of the people coming into the stands. So now the dogs aren't getting fed. They're not getting walked.
Mm-hmm.
And, all these union guys that take care of the dogs, they're on strike.
Mm-hmm.
So what's going to happen in my mind is now the dogs are running the track. And see, you're seeing it already. And
the humans are...
And they have to stop.
I love it.
Okay. So I visualized this whole thing.
Yes.
And I wrote it up as a story. I wrote it up as a blog post. And I published it. And it was called The Real Poop on the Dog Track.
I would love to read that. I have to find that and read that.
I'll get a copy to you.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
That's just an example of looking around and seeing what's out there and then looking at it from a little different prism.
Yes. Prism.
Yeah.
That's deep.
So that's what I do.
Yeah. I think that's amazing. Prism.
Yeah.
I said that's deep. It hit me when you said that, because if we allow ourselves to just like borrow and temporarily look through another lens, we'll become a lot more empathetic. And it expands.
It broadens your horizon.
Yes, it does.
You got it exactly right.
That's so witty. Yeah. I love it. Even just in your language telling the story, I can hear and respect the fact that you write. Thank you. Now, how long have you been writing?
Well, I've been writing for years. I didn't start writing. Well, in my business, in the marketing business, you're writing marketing plans. You're writing advertising copy.
Mm-hmm.
You're writing feature stories for magazines. So I did a lot of writing in business.
Mm-hmm.
When that slowed down, I moved to Sarasota. I now found the time to do some serious writing for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to write, I planned to write a book. What started out So I had this incredible staff. Mm-hmm. The people that were there when I got there, because the company was in financial trouble, and they all left as soon as I got there because I wasn't from around here. I was a stranger from the New York area, mm-hmm. and I was reorganizing the department. And they had these cush jobs, and all of a sudden they were going to have to really work. So almost the entire staff left. The managers, a director and a couple of managers, left within days.
Wow.
Because they put in some new rules.
Yeah.
And you know, and I'm not a tyrant. I don't know, crack a whip.
You're
but
right.
You want to be efficient. We ended up hiring all new people. I had a staff of about 25 people, mm-hmm. writers and designers. And, you know, we were the communications department. The staff was absolutely incredible. Now, if you can imagine an insurance company, the type of mindset they have.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're actuaries.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So there's 2,000 people working for the company. Probably, you know, 1,900 of them are reading spreadsheets all day long and looking at, you know, at rates and trends and where illnesses are going and what healthcare is costing.
Yeah.
And so we've got this little department and we have to advertise all of that and market all of that.
Oh.
So we had to be creative, you know. Reading spreadsheets and writing advertising copy are two opposite mindsets.
Right.
So, but this staff, the original staff, were very much like the bean counters.
Uh-huh.
The new staff we had were very creative. We were winning awards everywhere. I mean, we had a television show. Who has a television show? It was on the NBC affiliate.
Wow.
It was an Emmy-nominated TV show.
Wow.
With a little tiny, you know, healthcare company. So we did amazing stuff.
Yeah.
And when I left the company, I wanted to write a little tribute to them,
uh-huh.
because they were so devoted to the job and they were so good and they made my job easier.
Mm-hmm.
And so I get all the accolades for the success of the department, but it was the staff.
Yeah.
And I used to tell people that.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was going to write this story about. The way I kept the department creative, as I was telling you, always look for the humor in everything
mm-hmm.
that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
When you're working in this insurance company, there's not a lot of humor going on there.
Right, yeah.
But there was in our department.
Mm-hmm.
I would send out a goofy email just to the staff.
Uh-huh.
You know, we had a little email account
uh-huh.
for the 25 of us. You know, like somebody would write a note and saying, okay, you know, jugs of water, the water cooler is running out.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to need, you know, $4 from everybody for the water. So I'd write back something about, you know, that's costing me too much. I could drink out of the water fountain. You know? And, you know, so then, you know, they didn't know whether I'm joking or not. In
right.
the beginning, they didn't.
Yeah.
And then it got to be part of the joke.
Mm-hmm.
So the emails are flying around our department and we're keeping everybody entertained in this kind of bureaucratic, best way to say, bureaucratic, stodgy atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm an entrepreneur by trade,
mm-hmm.
and entrepreneurs and bureaucrats focus totally different mm-hmm. conducting business.
Yes.
So I've got this entrepreneurial little operation inside this massive bureaucracy where all they did was schedule meetings. So anyway, I'm writing up this little story. I'm going to publish this little booklet
uh-huh.
and give it to the staff. I just thought that much of them.
Are you looking to support local while sourcing handmade, one-of-a-kind gift ideas? Well, be awakened to living a life of inspiration. Yes, honey, that's the best life. How? Through our handmade products and authentic services, empowering you. Meet us at a local market or take a browse through a Realize Bradenton initiative, Shop Where I Live, Made in Manatee. And you'll find us along with other local business owners with amazing gifts. ShopWhereILive.com, Made in Manatee. See you soon.
I've looked at your catalog on Amazon. your latest project, On the Brink, Chaos and Mayhem at the Office.
Yes.
Just the title alone, it makes me want to read it. Because the reviews for On the Brink, I wrote a couple of them down. A lot of people were saying they got them excited. And someone said, this book will keep you on the edge of your seat. And I believe that, just in talking to you and telling what you wrote, for real. Someone said it was inspirational and a must read. And one comment, it said it should be made for a TV series. And they broke down their 5-star review. They said 1 star, it was intriguing and compelling storyline. The 2nd star, well-developed characters. 3rd star. Vivid scene descriptions. 4th star, believable and surprising twists and reveals. And then the 5th star, they said that it was clear and with a critical backstory. That inspired me. I'm a writer. I started writing a different kind of way. I'm self-taught. I've never, ever taken a creative writing class or any type of writing class other than what I needed, literature wise. But that's just something, it's therapeutic for me. It was a way for me to release emotion. And I started writing poetry. I went through a phase of healing, a journey of healing emotional trauma. And in that journey, I developed a theory, a philosophy to press on, using awareness to overcome all while healing the debt of the heart and the mind. And so I brought you a copy. You'll see it yourself. So you have it. And you're reading your reviews and just kind of reading some of your catalog that you wrote. It inspired me so deeply. And I have so many questions low key because I'm writing my first fictional story.
Good.
It's a psychological thriller. That's like my favorite movie genre in the world. So I'm like, one. And so that's what I'm doing right now.
You know, it's the same thing we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
You call it awareness. I call it observation.
Mm.
But that's how you healed. Seeing what's going on around you.
You're right.
And absorbing that.
Yes.
And saying, well, you know, there's a lot of different things happening in this world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So that's my, I want to know what inspired you to write On the Brink.
Well, the second book the first book that I wrote, which is going to be the second book in the series, is about my experience in Rhode Island.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what started out as this tribute to my staff,
mm-hmm.
when that reporter called me,
mm-hmm.
I said to myself, wait a minute. I have a real story to write, especially when I went up and met with the DA.
Mm-hmm.
This thing blew up into a major story.
Mm-hmm.
So now I went back into my computer and I downloaded hundreds of emails
mm-hmm.
from my time
mm-hmm.
in Rhode Island.
Mm-hmm.
And the book that I wrote, is all emails.
Oh, that's so smart.
And you can imagine, you know, you wrote this. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine how difficult it is to write a plot in emails?
Mm-hmm. I can imagine.
Or to develop characters with emails.
As far as, developing characters with emails, was the email a character? Did that make sense?
Not really, but you can tell by the content of the email.
It's character.
It contributes to the, you can tell if this guy, you know, is a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
Or he's on your side.
Yeah,
Or she's on your
side.
That's
amazing. That's like,
so that's, it was a very difficult book to write.
I believe.
3 more books after that using the same character.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
And so, but the series starts in Rhode Island. I'm saying, well, there's more to that story than the beginning in Rhode Island.
Mm-hmm.
So the book that I just wrote is about that same character. Now he starts out at age 11
uh-huh.
in New York City. And when you first meet him, he's selling illegal fireworks in New York City.
I thought that was so interesting. It could go all anywhere. I was like, I can't wait.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, a lot of stuff happens, but he becomes an adult and, you know, he meets a love interest.
Yeah.
And of course, she has a story too. And I wrote a little novelette about her story.
Oh, separately from?
Yes. And okay. I give that out to people that buy the book.
Oh, that's amazing.
Because you want to know about this woman. This is not, you know, just a demure little lady.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
this is a serious.
That is amazing.
With a very strong will.
Yeah.
Like a couple of alpha characters, they're very strong, and the clash is nonstop.
I love it.
I'm gonna have to send you, since you've ordered the book, I'm gonna have to send you
The novelette. Yes, I want to read about it.
But that's what inspired that story. I wanted to give this character a beginning. Tell you a quick Sarasota story.
Okay.
We moved here in 2002.
Uh-huh.
And we're online at one of the supermarkets and we're checking out.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this woman in front of us and she's wearing hot pink pants. bright fluorescent pink pants.
Yeah.
And she had no
highlighter. Yeah. Like a highlighter.
And they were kind of squeezing her to death. She had no business wearing these pants.
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Because she was very broad in the back.
Yes.
So she's calling attention to, and maybe she was proud of it. I try and cover up. Clothes cover up a lot of sins. Ours didn't.
Yeah.
And to make matters worse, right across the back, it says Sarasota. These are what they're selling in the tour shops.
Oh, yeah, like
right across the back.
Yes.
In big, bold letters. Well, of course, they were bigger, bold letters than they were before she put them on.
Yes.
I look at that, and so I grab Sarah, and I said, "Will you look at that? She named the left cheek after you."
What did your wife do?
She just double-doubled it. Then she gives me, "Shh, be quiet," She didn't want this woman to hear me.
I would have cried.
I believe humor is all around us. It's just a matter of perspective. There are oddities and idiosyncrasies happening in every moment when noticed makes life interesting. Awareness is like wearing a pair of glasses that help me to see the world in a whimsical way. For me, this isn't just being silly or mystical. It's a real-time buffer of protection against my emotions, placing distance between how I feel and what I do. And in that time is a great time to, as Martin says, stop, think about it. Maybe if I see the circumstance in other angles, there just might be some joy hidden in this otherwise chaotic situation. You too can cultivate this ability to see humor. It's about being present and allowing yourself to see beyond the obvious. Sometimes it's the unexpected that brings the most laughter. By embracing creativity and allowing our minds to wander freely, honey, we can uncover comedic gold in the most unexpected places. Humor, like fresh air to the soul.
I was very fortunate with this book. I had some good help with the book. I have a group, I call them the Flash Mob.
Uh-huh.
And they're my group of followers. they all like to read, and they're interested in the writing process. Okay, so I'm not sure. I am sure some of them would love to write as well.
Yes.
And so they're living through vicariously through my writing.
Oh, that is amazing.
And so they're involved in it. This some of them volunteer to beta read a manuscript when it's very raw.
Yeah.
And say, oh, this is a piece of junk. You know, you're not gonna publish this, are you? That kind of thing. But they'll weigh in on book titles. We went through the book title of On the Brink. That's probably the fifth or sixth title we had.
Really?
We kept changing it. People started reading different parts of the book and said, well, no.
Yeah.
This doesn't fit here. And so we kept going through titles. The back cover copy, the descriptive copy. People weighed in on that.
That was amazing.
The contest for the cover design. We started out with six cover designs and then got down to two. And then everybody voted on the two.
That is amazing.
So I have about 250 people in this group now.
Yes.
And I call them mobsters. They belong to the flash mob.
Yeah, okay.
And so,
but
they help
mobster.
Me. They yes. help me with this thing, and they encourage me, if nothing else. I mean, not all of them are active all the time, but they're very encouraging. And so I have all this help. Some people did some, you know, with the beta reading, they were giving me information. I was saying, you know, this part of the book isn't working for me. You got to hear some ideas that might help you with it.
Oh.
And so that made the book better. And then one of the flash mobsters, who is one of my daughter-in-laws, she did an edit on the book. And she really helped me with dialogue and with some scene descriptions, mostly the dialogue.
That's where I need help.
Yeah, well, that's the hardest thing to write.
Yeah, I'm weak.
And so then, right about this time last year, I was finishing up the manuscript. And I wrapped it up right before Christmas. And the week between Christmas and New Year's, I sent the manuscript out to six publishers.
Mm-hmm.
And within a week after New Year's, I had four contracts on my desk of the six. Contracts, not we're interested.
Contracts.
Here's our deal.
That is amazing.
Yeah. So I went with one of them.
Yes.
So I'm very excited about this group. And I talked to the CEO of the publishing company.
Yeah.
And I told him about the group. And he was blown away. He said, he's got 900 writers, I think. He's got all... It's a small company, but hundreds of writers are in his stable.
Yeah.
And how many he's worked with over the years. He said he's never heard of anybody with that kind of a group. A lot of writers have a couple of confidants that help them, and they rely on outside editors, and you know, when they write independently, or they'll use the publisher's editor if they have a publisher. Not all of them can get a publisher.
Right.
So he said to me, I've never heard of anybody with a group of hundreds of people that are involved. So, you know, they're my secret weapon.
Yes.
And I'm thrilled with this book. I mean, it's definitely my best work. And it's my best work because of the help I have.
The collective.
Group. Yeah.
I think that is amazing. That's inspirational to me because I'm not really knowing, just really going off of emotions and instinct. You know, and survival write.
That's how I started. That's really? Where that's what you're writing from.
Yeah.
I mean, I took a writing course back in the 60s at the New School in Greenwich Village.
Yeah.
And I didn't get anything out of it. I mean, the guy, he was a writer. I think he was more interested in dating the women that were in the class than he was teaching it.
Yeah,
You know, all the women got plenty of attention.
Yeah.
I mean, the first night of the first session, he said to us, okay, I want you to write the first chapter of a book. I don't care what it's about, just write a first chapter. And then we'll review it and go from there.
Yeah.
So the rest of the class, the rest of the course was reviewing these first chapters. And of course, he never got to mine. And what he would do, some of them he would read in class, and then we would discuss it in class.
Yeah.
And that was mostly the the first chapters by the good looking women.
Thank you, Slade.
So anyway, we get to the end of the class and he's never even commented on mine. And he gave back, he said, by the end of the course, I'll give you back your first chapter with my notes. And I never got one. I never got my first chapter back.
Yeah, his agenda.
So at the end of the last class, I went up to the desk and I said, excuse me, you never gave me back my chapter. I wrote one and, you know, I put a lot of time into it. And he goes, oh, I must have. Your name is Sisti? Yeah. He's flipping through all his pages. He finds the thing. And he had no notes on it. He goes, this, he said, this is a piece of junk. He said, I didn't even want to comment on it. It was so bad.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that just blew my mind. I mean. And it was, again, it was the first chapter of a book, but it was kind of an interesting short story. About, you know, about a guy on a date. It had a great, you know, twist at the end. So.
I want to know, what did that do to you? Did you continue to write, like, from that survival, from that anger,
well,
from that
frustration? I put aside the fiction writing.
Okay.
And, of course, I told an agent years later when he asked me about my experience, how much experience do you have writing fiction? And he's holding the manuscript of my first novel. So I said, oh, I got plenty of experience writing fiction. I've been writing advertising copy for years.
Which I think is amazing, too, by the way.
Anyway, so I put the fictional writing aside for the time being.
So what's your secret weapon?
What is the secret to crafting an unexpected plot twist? A twist that the reader would appreciate and actually surprise them, like, oh, like what? Because I'm writing a psychological thriller. I'm trying. It's my first time. I'm like a nervous wreck, but I'm just asking.
Well, that's a very difficult question.
Okay.
Because there could be a lot of answers to that.
Okay.
You know, depending on what you're writing. Again, I gave a talk last week and I talked about the writing process.
On what? Was it like something we can go check out or?
No, I was at a woman's club.
Oh.
And there were 65 people there. And the title of my talk for the day was Creative Thinking. And I asked them, who in this room are creative thinkers? What that think outside the box. And someone put their hands up. You know,
I'm gonna put my hand up.
Yeah, of course. look what you're doing. That's creative. So I went into the process of writing. Now, most writers are very organized. Okay, very detail oriented, organized, and even to the extent of being anal. And it's hard to imagine a creative process being anal, but a lot of them are. So what they do is they write a general plot. And then from that, they start thinking about what characters will fill that plot. How many do you need? And that's not the last word, because as you're writing, you may want to insert more characters.
Right.
And then you want to think about the scenes. Okay, so this is the plot. How do we get from the beginning to the end? You know, you got to write the middle, and the middle is the biggest part. So now you start writing scenes. You outline scenes and locations, and you write the descriptions of the characters, and that's how they write.
Okay.
Now, I can't do that. I've never even tried. But I have an idea for a story, and I really don't know exactly how it's going to end. All I know is, you know, this person is going to meet somebody, or something's going to happen to this person, and that's going to affect his road, his journey. And I start writing.
Okay.
Okay. And as I'm writing, I need another character, and he's going to meet this guy, and I write that. And I don't know how the book is going to develop. And even on the brink, I mean, I had an idea where I wanted it to end, because I know the second book is up in Rhode Island, so this book needs to end it in Rhode Island.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing I knew about it. How am I going to get there?
Right.
What is going to be the thing that makes me go to Rhode Island?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or want me to go to Rhode Island? So it really happens this way. It's probably because of the way I train myself to think about the different what ifs.
Mm-hmm.
I've got 12 different scenarios that could happen. I mean, I'm going to walk out that door in a little bit, and 12 different things can happen between the time I get to the front door of the building.
You're right.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's the way I write.
Mm-hmm.
So, I say, I have no idea where the story is going, mm-hmm. and I just start writing, and it kind of starts writing itself.
Yeah.
Now, writing, it's also a discipline. I get up every morning. I'm up at 6 o'clock, and I'm on the computer by 10 after 6,
mm-hmm.
and I'm writing. I mean, I'm reading. Sometimes I'll read through the news of the morning news, mm-hmm. or read a couple of different websites. I'll look at my email, and if there's anything I got to deal with right away, and I start writing. And I usually write for a couple of hours. Sometimes mm-hmm. I just start writing, and I miss breakfast. I go right through lunch.
Do you go by feeling, or do you have like a workout that you like? I'm gonna write 2,000, 5,000 words today.
A lot of people do that. Yeah.
That's what I'm like reading.
That's a discipline thing. And if you need discipline, then you put a count on it.
Okay.
And you may throw that 1,000 words out.
That's true.
The next day.
It's like, what was that?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
But like I say, those are the two different ways that I see writing a book.
Thank you.
Yeah. Self-help book called A Failure Myth.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm so interested. Yeah. I'm about to get that one too. I'm interested in reading that, how you turn your failures or how you perceive your failures into your... I'm just paraphrasing big time. Failures.
That's exactly what it's about.
Sure.
You fail when you attempt to do something that's outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you fail, or at least you're positioning yourself to fail. You don't want to fail. That's when the failure occurs. If you're doing something that is standard, well, you're not going to fail during that.
Right, yeah.
You may do better
or
worse.
There's no test, really. Yeah.
So there's no challenge there.
Right, yeah.
But when you go outside the box and challenge yourself,
mm-hmm.
that's when you have the opportunity to fail. And so the failure, people look at failure as a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And failure is a teaching opportunity. Mm-hmm. It didn't work. So you learned what's not working.
Mm-hmm.
So turn that around and make it work.
Yes.
And that's the failure myth. People run away from failure.
Mm-hmm.
And companies punish you for failing.
Mm-hmm.
So big corporations, you never step out and say, well, let's try this.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And you know what? Just listening to your failure myth, you know what it makes me think about? It's something I say all the time. Alchemy. It's alchemy. Using something that's not working, that's harmful in the moment, observing, problem solving in real time.
Yeah.
And changing it.
Well, when I wrote The Failure Myth, I just written the second edition of it. It's even bigger now.
I saw that.
The first one I wrote was probably about 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
My grandkids were all young then, maybe high school age.
Mm-hmm.
And I got 12 grandkids, and they were pretty close in age.
Wow.
So I wrote the book, and I gave each one of them a copy.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, this is important. You need to read this book. And, of course, none of them read it. They're high school kids. They don't read books.
Yeah.
So my youngest son saw the book on my grandson's dresser,
mm-hmm.
and he picked it up, and he read it. He sends me an email, had me in tears. He said, Dad, everything you taught me is in this book. And it's the reason I'm successful. I have 6 kids. They're all successful. They all do well. They're independent.
Mm-hmm.
They're entrepreneurial,
Mm-hmm.
But he took a $40,000 a year job in Rhode Island. He worked for a health insurance company. And he parlayed that into a sales position where he was, in a couple of years, I think he made 7 figures.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, he makes high six figures.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. So what an endorsement that was. Yeah. I mean, so, but I mean, the personal thing to me, I mean, I was just crushed when he said it. I felt, you know.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, yeah, that.
It was all worth it. Yeah. You know,
that's a good book. It's a good gift book for young people.
I'm going to get that one as well. I'm letting you know right here in your face, Mr. Sisti, that I'm going to read them both. And I'm going to come back. I'm going to recommend them. We'll do a little review. Well, I'm going to do a little review.
Okay.
Yeah, seriously. And gather some questions and maybe, hopefully, you'll come back.
Oh, absolutely.
At some point and hang out with us. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that with us. I'm going to speak for the Conscious Crew. That's what I call my supporters that listen to this podcast. I call us the Conscious Crew. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your insight. I appreciate you sharing your knowledge in this space. It's funny, we didn't know each other until... literally, y'all. That's why it's so important to cherish the connections that we make with people, because we never know from that connection what other connections will spark. And this was not planned, but my last podcast show was Unleash Your Creative Spark. Those are the things I talked about. I talked about building a relationship with creativity to live as a creative being versus I'm going to paint today versus I'm going to read a book, do some crafts today. So that's what the episode was about. So definitely if you haven't heard it, y'all go back and take a listen to that. But I really, really appreciate your insight personally. And I know that the Conscious Crew definitely feel the value.
Great.
Yeah.
I'm glad I can contribute.
Yes. Okay. Well, is there anything you'd like to tell us before you leave? Like, where can we buy On the Brink?
If you're local, I have books. I can sell books.
Okay.
I'm going to be talking to a couple of bookstores in the area. I'm going to have a shopping site on my website, so you can buy books right off my website.
Amazing.
And then they'll drop ship them to you.
Yes.
If you're local, I can get them to you.
Okay.
If your listeners are interested in the Flash Mob.
Yeah, I'm interested in the Flash Mob.
Well, then you're
yeah.
on my website. It's michaelsisti.com. You can sign up and join the Flash Mob.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to sign up and join.
Yes, and you can quit anytime. I do not share emails with anyone, so your email is safe.
Yeah, absolutely. Same here.
Well, thank you for having me. It was as much fun for me.
I know.
You were having fun. I can see that. And I think that's why I was put on Earth. I'm the distributor of fun.
That's right. Y'all heard it here first, right here in the Vibe Clinic. Thank you once again. Thank you for joining us.
In closing, y'all, I want y'all to imagine with me. Can y'all do that? Let's take a breath and imagine life as a blank canvas. You know, the fibers of this canvas is made up of things that we can't change about ourselves, like race, ethnicity, our family, you know. Ooh, y'all canvas is so clean and pretty. Okay, and imagine life's emotions, you know, gathered from when you can remember until now. The joys, the aches, the humor, the disappointments, the peace. Allow yourself to visualize these emotions as biodegradable, lead-free, fade-resistant, the best paint existing. Okay, you have this paint, and from the weight of the emotion that's on your heart, paint. Paint your canvas. It's okay, because some of it may crack. Some of it's going to bubble up in the center. Clunk, smear, And at this level, it can look like a hot mess. Ooh, but when we zoom out and look at this canvas of life from a lens of awareness to living multidimensionally, this paint splatter becomes a masterpiece. And the more we fearlessly paint ourselves, more aspects of the larger picture is revealed. That's priceless. Paint your own canvas, y'all. Be you unapologetically. I love y'all. Peace.